to Excuse My ADHD, a podcast for adults with or who think they may have ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and this is my journey. Hello, and welcome to Excuse My ADHD, episode number 12, Breaking the Stigma at Work with Michelle E. Dickinson. I'm your host, Jeanette, and I'm navigating ADHD one distraction at a time. In this episode, I got to speak with TED speaker, author, and mental health advocate Michelle E. Dickinson. Michelle's given keynote speeches on how to create a culture of compassion in the workplace, the courage to share, and shifting a relationship to mental illness, just to name a few. I reached out to Michelle because I had seen post after post from the support group pages with people who don't know how to talk to their supervisor about their ADHD or other mental health issue. And I'm one of those people. Listen as we discuss the best ways to approach the conversation with your supervisor and what information you should be prepared with before you go in. If you're a first-time listener, thanks for tuning in. And if you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back.
Hello, and welcome to Excuse My ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and today I am here with Michelle Dickinson. She is a passionate mental health advocate, TED speaker, and a published author of a memoir entitled Breaking Into My Life. Today, we're going to talk with Michelle about, you know, coming out in the workplace and dealing with mental health in the workplace. So welcome, Michelle. I'm so excited to have you on today.
Thank you for having me, Jeanette. I'm so thrilled to be here with you.
Thank you. And so I guess let's just get into it. Part of the reason I wanted to have you on, because this is something I'm struggling with myself, is how do you know if it's okay to talk to your supervisor about your issues?
You know, that's such a good question. And I think what it all boils down to is what is your relationship with your leader and what is the culture in your workplace? So, you know, we can say all day long, you should just disclose, but that's a very personal choice. And if there's not a trusting relationship and a culture that you're going to feel like you're going to get supported, mm-hmm. It's terrifying. I can only imagine how you feel right now.
Yeah. Cause I'll tell you, at least for me, I've sat in meetings, you know, with my coworkers and they make jokes about it and I try and laugh it off. You know, because they'll do the squirrel, which is like a big ADHD joke that everybody seems to have. I mean, at some pieces, yeah, it's true because our attention will get taken by, you know, whatever the next shiny object is. But at the same time, the way they joke about it is kind of hurtful. And then we also, it's just taken for granted, I guess. I don't know. And I think that's a lot of people have to deal with is, you know, not feeling very safe.
Right.
But at the same time, if it's affecting your performance, then what do you do?
Right. You don't want it to look like you're just slacking off. You want to have that honesty so your boss can kind of meet you where you are. So I guess I want to turn it around to you and ask you, sorry, what is your workplace environment like? And do they talk about inclusion of people with all invisible disabilities? Like, is there even a conversation about here's what we're doing for people with a mental health challenge, or is it just non-existent? Like, what's your current space?
In our office, because I work at a university, but in our office in particular, there really isn't any talk about it. And then the university as a whole, you know, it's mostly centered around the students, which obviously because it's university and there are accommodations, there are more accommodations for visible disabilities.
Yeah.
Than invisible ones. And I've been trying to find information on the website for it, but it's, like I said, it's more geared towards students.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I do, so, you know, just a little bit more about me so you can
understand my lens on this. So I grew up with a mom who had bipolar disorder and I was her caregiver for many, many years. And I saw firsthand what that mental illness looked like and how debilitating it was for her. Mm-hmm. And then last year, while I was working at my Fortune 500 company, I dealt with a life event that caused me to have depression for the first time. And I was a top performer in my company until that point. And I struggled with my performance during those, you know, really tough months of time. And at the time, the company had a remit. They had the organization at the top level was like, we are going to be an inclusive workspace for everyone. And that means people dealing with a mental illness. So you sort of felt like you had support, like this was important enough for the company to like almost declare this. They were weaving it into our mission and vision. They were making it like very important. And then you had an employee resource group that was sort of employee driven around mental health, where employees kind of, the structure was established and employees came out of the darkness to say, we want a place where we all feel accepted and we don't want there to be a stigma. We don't want these jokes being made around, you know, oh, the squirrel conversation. Yeah. Like we want people to feel like they're comfortable. So you had the top level saying, this is what we're doing. You had the lowest level or the employee level, the folks on the ground speaking the language, but what was missing was the management, and the management was who you interact with on a day-to-day basis. And they're your experience of your organization. So the thing that was really hard for me was I wanted to trust that I could disclose, because here I was in an organization where I was like, God, we're really turning the Titanic here. It's a big company, but I should lead by example. So I had the courage and I said to my leader, listen, I'm struggling. I'm dealing with depression. I'm sorry. I have to go to my therapy appointments. I have mornings where I am just not feeling motivated. I'm just depressed. And I disclosed that, and it was met with a very lukewarm response. Like I didn't feel supported. I felt like I was asked, well, if you're not going to meet your deliverables, you need to tell us. And everything was so performance focused. And I get it. It's a business. You can't not have deliverables. I get it. But I didn't feel empathy and I didn't feel compassion. And that was really hard for me. So I think that's the twofold part, right? So when I say that I have the trifecta of mental health, I grew up with my mother, I dealt with my own depression. And then I was part of the leadership team that was driving that mental health ERG, employee resource group within my company. Like I was at the helm with the leaders, creating the space, speaking the speak, you know, walking around with my book to senior leaders saying, this is why we need to care. And this is why we need to talk more openly about mental health. And I was at the effects of a lack of compassion from my own immediate leader. So I know what it feels like. And it's not a good place to be. So I would go back and say, what's your culture? What is your company remit? And what is your trusting relationship with your leader? So the person you report to, do you feel like you have an authentic, trusting relationship? Because that's everything.
No.
And that's everything. So how could you be expected to disclose to them and feel like, oh, they're going to get it. They're going to get me. You just don't.
No, not at all. And I mean, the amount of empathy or compassion, most of the time it feels fake or forced. So trusting them is hard because it's been brought up so much as a joke or in passing that it's not a safe place. It doesn't really feel safe to disclose it. And but like you, what you were saying, what you were doing at your institution, I feel like that needs to be done here. I mean, they do a lot of for the students because we have this, you know, impact, innovation, inclusion mission, and it's woven into our goals, but at the same time there's still so much work that needs to be done, especially around the invisible disabilities.
So you said impact, inclusion, and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Those are like the staples of your institution.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So just started a big drive on this in the past couple years.
So that's great, right? Because mm-hmm. that's something. So what I love to do is have conversations. I have a meetup in my community of encouraging people to be the change. Because at the end of the day, like companies should want to care to do something, but they're too busy. And they're, you know, and this is important, sort of. So I encourage people to be the change, right? So what is it that could be done to help educate people around what inclusion of invisible disabilities is? Because at the end of the day, it's a diversity and inclusion topic. If you're willing to make those special accommodations for someone with a physical disability, the same kind of empathy and accommodations for someone dealing with anything from ADHD to depression should be explored as well. So I guess my challenge would be back to you to say, what could you talk to maybe your HR department about around education? Like, what could you do to educate people around invisible disabilities? Because conversation, open conversation creates understanding, and understanding can potentially help with the empathy piece, because they'll get it's not appropriate to laugh at someone and say squirrel if they understand really what does that mean? What's life like for someone with ADHD? I mean, most people aren't affected by it, so it's very easy to point over there and not really try to get into their listening and into their world of what that's like.
No, yeah, absolutely. And to what you said, it's actually something I've been thinking a lot about in the past couple weeks, because I was put on fire by this CHAD meeting, and I went to the International ADHD annual conference, and I went to a lot of sessions in there, and it's something I've been thinking about is actually reaching out to the diversity group here and talking about either forming a committee or getting on a committee and doing something, because it just feels like I know I'm not the only one. I know several people that have depression or are bipolar or have ADHD or a learning disability or something else, but they're too afraid to talk about it. Like, as coworkers, we're afraid to talk about it as coworkers,
even with each other. So I think that there's really, even with each other.
Yeah. There's just so much of a stigma built around it.
Yeah.
It's almost,
you don't want to show your challenge, because you don't want someone to judge you.
Right.
Right.
And that's the way the culture is here. It's so much of a looking out for yourself, because it's been driven that way. You know, I try and I strive, and I think my team does a really good job. Just my team, about being open with each other. We're really close knit and we talk about things together. But as a department as a whole, I think there are these invisible wedges between people and stigmas. People just don't want to talk about things or try to acknowledge.
So here's a thought. You just said two really cool things. What if you were to go to your diversity group or your HR group and say, listen, I just came back from this conference and I learned some really cool stuff that I want to share with you for not only our internal department, but even for our student body. I think that there are some good nuggets that I could share with you that I learned. And here's something else. Like, I'm really proud of the team that I work on and the trust that we have. And I wonder if there's something we could do to build similar energy amongst the broader community that we all work with. And I want to help with that. Because to be honest with you, when I think back to the company that I was working at the time, when we built the employee resource group, it literally was one person on the TED stage telling their story about their daughter that tried to commit suicide. He came off the stage and people literally came out of the shadows and said, oh my goodness, like, I have depression. My brother has depression. I'm a caregiver. I'm affected. It was amazing, because it was the employees that drove that employee resource group. It wasn't the company that said, here's a group, go populate it. It was the employees demanding there be a community like this to support one another and raise compassion in the company.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Like, even just having like a support group, I guess, is kind of what I was thinking of too, is seeing about having some kind of support group for the employees and the students where they can go and just talk about it would be helpful.
Do you guys have an Active Minds on campus for the students? Active Minds is like a mental health club.
I'm not sure if we do.
I wonder if you could tap into something like that, even for your...
So is that like an international thing that they do at universities for students?
Yeah, it's a really cool organization called Active Minds. And what they do is they set up chapters at various college campuses for students who struggle with a disability, an invisible disability, to kind of come together, like you're saying, like a support group, and connect with one another so they know they're not alone and they're not having to navigate mental illness on their own at college. So they have a lot of great resources, tools, activities, things that they do for campuses. It's a pretty structured program, but I'm just thinking, I wonder if you could even lean into that and leverage what they're doing within
I'm sure, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll have to look into that.
It's all awareness building and conversation starting, you know? Like, it's this whole isolation and everyone trying to navigate it in isolation that's the challenge. I think if you're courageous enough to start these kinds of conversations, it's going to be hard for people to look the other way.
Well, and two, and I think a big part of it starts with just the job application itself.
Yeah.
Because it asks that question. And it automatically makes you feel excluded and afraid to answer it.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if you say, yes, I have a disability on a job application, automatically there's a bias and a stigma.
Yeah.
Even if it's a visible disability.
Yeah.
Because then people are automatically thinking, oh, what kind of accommodations are we going to have to give this person?
Yeah. This is work, right?
Yeah.
This is more work.
How much is this going to cost? What is this going to do?
Yes.
So yeah, no, that's, yeah. Okay. So that's a lot to think about.
Yeah. But I feel like you, oh my gosh, like you're probably learning a ton just by this podcast. Like how would they not want to lean into what you're up to?
I've learned just so much, and it's just, you know, I started it by I just wanted to reach somebody so they don't feel alone. But now I've got more of a drive to just break free and just educate people more. Cause I was ignorant in the beginning. I was also making those jokes, and, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand what ADHD is, what depression is. You know, people with depression, they put on this almost, it's a mask.
Yes.
And you never know what's going on behind it, because they're showing you what they think you want to see.
And that addition, that wearing the game face or the mask, adds another layer of anxiety that they have to keep themselves concealed. And how is that any way to show up? Like, it's not fair.
It's not. So once people decide that, you know, they want, if they're in that safe space or they're at a point where they can talk to people, how do you start that conversation?
So are you talking about it from an employee resource group perspective?
Well, I was going to my boss or my human resources just to put it out there so I could get accommodations. I mean, what do you say? You say, I have a disability, I want to get accommodations, or I want to put it on record so you're protected in case something happens and you're not ready to tell your boss. I guess I don't understand quite what the steps are, how you start that.
You know, I think it goes back to education and trust and having an open rapport with your boss.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to take a degree of honesty with them. Like, do you know I have, like, that, you know, and I don't know your comfort level. This is all going to be up to you in terms of how you feel, but like having them understand the things that are the pain points for you, instead of it being like, I need to, you know, document this, I want this on file. It's like, no, when you put me in an open space seating, I can't function. And I want to do the best job that I can possibly do. But this open space seating causes me anxiety, causes me stress, and I can't focus. So can I just like have you understand that I, you know, that doesn't work for me, but this does. And then I can be the best I can be for this role.
So basically just like being specific with what the problem is, and kind of already having an idea of what you need to remedy it or make things better.
Yeah. Like this is what would really support me in this situation. But it comes down to, you have to be the change and you have to help educate. If your diversity group or your HR department is not willing to kind of champion the knowledge enhancement of your people managers, then you're going to have to be the one to be courageous to disclose and then courageous to educate. at the end of the day, if I was your leader and you came to me and said, I have this, you know, ADHD, and these are the things that don't work, but this would work, you would be giving me so much information and helpful information so that I could support you, because a good leader really wants their people to show up the best way that they can. So whatever that looks like, a good leader should want to be able to do if they can within, you know, within whatever workplace
rules
there are.
Yeah, that's what I try and do with my people. I mean, I'm lucky. I have amazing people. They work so hard. And, you know, if there's a day they got to go home, not do their work for the rest of the day, that's fine. It's like, that's what you got to do. Or if, you know, you finish your stuff early, great. If there's some, you know, if you need help, awesome. Everybody's willing to chip in and everybody's willing to help everybody. And I just wish there was more of that here. Like, none of us judge each other. We have, you know, but at the same time, we all do our own work, but we help each other out. So none of us are falling behind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have ADHD, somebody else does, somebody else has anxiety. We've all been open with each other about it and try and help each other when we know that we're suffering or we need that extra help.
You're such a good case study. If I was your institution, I would want to know exactly how you've done this, because if this doesn't exist across your organization, this is such a good example. You live with it. You navigate it. You've created trust within your team. They've disclosed to you. You support each other. I mean, seriously, it's amazing.
I think it's just, I always go back to something that I was taught by one of my prior bosses. And it's one, to treat everybody like they're equal, no matter what their position is, because we're all doing the same thing. We're all equally important. It doesn't matter if I'm the boss, if you're the boss, if you're the lowest person on the totem pole, everybody has a role to play. Mm-hmm. And if one person can't play their role effectively, then it makes it harder and more difficult on everybody else. But if everybody's doing everything to help each other, then things go so much better. And then we try and incorporate fun. It's like, we have team meetings that are only supposed to be an hour, and they always run out to like two and a half hours, because for half of it, we're joking and having fun. I mean, we're working, but you have to like have an element of fun. You're with these people, what, 8-10 hours a day?
Exactly.
5 days a week.
Yeah.
If you can't be open with each other and trust each other, what's the point? Because you're just going to be a cog in a wheel spinning like a mouse with the whatever.
Yes. Yes. So true. So true.
I think it's just something I've been taught. And, you know, one thing I've always learned is I had a boss that was a micromanager, and I never wanted to be like that.
Yeah. You see how bad that looks, and you're just like, wow, this is definitely the example I am not following.
No. And amazing. I want my people to do better than me.
Yeah. Thrive, right? And
yeah.
And you are the source of that.
And it just makes me so proud when they do. Like a proud mama bear.
That's awesome.
I don't know. So I guess it comes out organically for us.
That's so good.
Not anything we have to work at.
But I love that you have inclusion in your three pillars right there that you shared. So it's like, you could totally harness that and say, I have an idea of how we can really make this more inclusive. You know, if you come at it from a space of opportunity instead of something is broken, they're going to be more liable to listen to you. Like, why don't we really amp up the inclusion? You know, like, I talked to this girl today. She worked for a Fortune 500 company. They had this whole ERG where employees were supporting each other, openly talking about mental health. It really created an environment that I think, you know, we could do here. It could be something as simple as that to just inspire them to want to do more.
That's awesome. So what about, though, if they don't have something like that in their mission? How would somebody go? Would they just, you know, hey, I've got this idea, I want to start here, and just kind of...
Yeah, that's what I love to help people with, is like, the reality is, you know, you want an employer to pay attention, because this isn't a diversity and inclusion concern, and it is the right thing to do for their people, which are their greatest asset, right? Everyone knows people are the greatest asset of any organization. But the reality is like, what, 1 in 4 people will deal with a mental illness in their lifetime. and life events occur and people get, you know, knocked down. Mm-hmm. And there's a disability cost associated with it. So whether or not the company is looking at that, disability costs are skyrocket around mental health when you start to break it down. It's amazing when you look at major depression and the financial implications on disability. Employers are paying for it, and they may or may not even know that they are.
Well, I mean, if you're stressed and depressed for long enough, that's a lot of stress on your body, and eventually you're getting sick and you're feeling the physical effects, and then you're doing claims on your insurance, and that makes that go up. So the fringe benefit cost is going up. Yeah. And if you're not coming into work, then that time missed is affecting it, and it's affecting everybody else. It's like a throwing a pebble in a pond and the ripple effect.
Exactly. So it's like the right thing to do. I mean, and you can have physical health, to your point, you can't have physical health without good mental health. So it really behooves employers to really start to pay attention more to the mental well-being of their employees proactively, instead of reactively, that they're going to have to pay for in disability costs. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I think nowadays more and more companies are starting to add a mental well-being component to the remit for their employees. But if you have a company that's not, all it takes is a conversation. It's like, did you ever consider that in mental illness is an invisible disability, and we accommodate with our ramp out front for those with physical disabilities. So is it time that we maybe look at what we can do for those with invisible disabilities? Because more and more people are struggling with all kinds of depression, anxiety, all kinds of mental illness challenges.
Absolutely. Since you've become such a big advocate for mental health, have you noticed any companies that do like a really excellent job that could be used as models?
Yeah, there's a few actually. And there's a great organization out there called One Mind at Work. And then Mindshare Partners is another one. They showcase organizations that are doing good work and setting the stage. I know Ernst & Young is a company that's doing really great things for their people when it comes to mental health. But there are others that are leading by example. I can share with you a report that I got that outlines examples of what companies are doing if you'd like. I'd love that.
And then I could share it online if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are some pieces of advice that you like to give people when dealing with this and making this decision?
To you disclose to their leader?
Yeah. What kind of things do you think people need to think about the most? The good effects, the bad effects, the things they need to consider when they're making their decision?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to your immediate relationship with your manager, and if you feel that trust, and what ownership you have. So I don't want people to feel like they're at the effects of things. You want to stay as empowered around this conversation as possible. You own your space and you choose where you work, right? So if this environment doesn't work, then you choose that I don't like this space anymore for me, and I'm going to go elsewhere. But I encourage you to have the courageous conversation and use it as a vehicle to educate, just like we talked about, just like when I suggested you talk to your leader, you be very specific. You know, this doesn't work. This could work. I'm committed to being a good performer. I'm committed to doing a good job. I like my work, but these are the kinds of things that I need in order to be the best version of myself and perform well. So I think you really need to give your manager specifics of what you need. And you have to do your part to cultivate trust. I think, you know, there's a great concept about managing up. Right? Managing your manager. What is it that you're doing to open the trust door? Don't sit back and say, well, we don't have a trusting relationship. I'm going to leave that in the hands of my leader. Instead, say, what is it that I can do to help cultivate trust with my leader? What is it that I can do? Maybe if I shared something small, maybe they would share something small back, and then we could start to bridge that gap between us, eventually getting to the point where it's like, okay, so now I feel comfortable and I can truly disclose to you, this is my diagnosis. This is what I deal with every day when I come in here. And this is what I could really benefit from having from you, and then really get their buy-in.
So do you think that would be a good place to start? I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, they're at their performance evaluation, they're getting not so good feedback. Would that be a good time? I mean, because they don't want to get fired. They don't want to look like they're using it as an excuse.
Yes, I get that. And I think letting it go to a performance evaluation is not the way to go. You need an ongoing dialogue, a regular interaction with your leader so they can see that you're trying. They can see that you're putting your best foot forward. You're asking for ways to show up the best version, and you're not letting it go until it's now a rebuttal to a negative review. You want to have an ongoing conversation. And the other piece too is there's power in numbers. I encourage you to start that if you want to call it a support group or an employee resource group. Mm-hmm. I mean, you all know your current culture in your workplace and you all deal with something. You could come up with strategies, ideas, suggestions, educational lunch and learns, ideas that can really forward this within your culture more powerfully together than in isolation.
Right. Absolutely. No, I agree with that. And to your point about not waiting until it gets to that point, unfortunately, I think a lot of people's problem is that they're not getting necessarily the feedback beforehand to know that they're suffering. And so the first time they're hearing about it is at that performance evaluation. Hmm. I think that's where a lot of people struggle. I have been lucky and I haven't had to deal with that, but I know a lot of people have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really why I wanted to have this conversation too is because so many people, I see it all over the various support groups that I'm on. It's always a question that's brought up about how you approach it. Or I'm at my performance evaluation and I just got a bad review. How do I talk to my boss and tell them what's going on? Or I just got diagnosed because I got a bad review. So now what do I do? How do I talk to my person? So I think what you said about, you know, owning it and then being specific is really important.
Yeah. Yeah. They can't support you if you don't give them ideas of how to support you. You got to consider that no one outside of you knows what it's like to be you.
Right.
You want them to have compassion, but they don't know what you struggle with every day.
Yeah. That's so true. So I think that pretty much covers all the questions I have. Mm-hmm. And I truly appreciate you coming on today and speaking with me. And I think we got a lot of good information and I want you to hold me accountable. I want you to check in with me in a month and make that a goal. And I am absolutely going to reach out to them.
Awesome. If you need any help creating or, you know, creating an ERG, or if you need any support whatsoever, and even having that conversation with your diversity folks, just reach out to me. I'm so here to help you.
Oh, I absolutely will. Don't offer if you're not ready to follow up, because I absolutely will. I think it's so important, so very important, because we're at work. I mean, how much time do we spend at work?
So true.
I mean, if we're lucky, only 8 hours, and an hour, that's lunch, but most people are spending 10, sometimes 12 hours a day if they get lucky enough to have a 4-day work week.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes people have multiple jobs. So you're around these people all the time. And if you can't be honest about it, your struggles, it just makes things so much more difficult. And like you said, it adds to that anxiety and it adds to that depression.
Totally. I just want to applaud you though, Jeanette, like seriously, what you're doing. You struggle with this, yet you lead by example and you cultivate trust and you are compassionate. And I think who you are and how you show up probably has much more of a greater impact than you think. So just keep doing you're doing. I mean, I also feel like you're perfectly positioned to drive further change.
I hope so. I would really like to see something change, even if it's for selfish reasons.
Yeah.
It would help other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I've seen a lot, is that people with ADHD thrive on helping other people. And if we can help each other, it's even better.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
Thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation, and I'm so glad that I was able to find you on the She Podcast. that thread has been amazing.
Awesome.
So I hope you have a most wonderful day. And thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Excuse My ADHD. If you like what you hear, don't forget to please subscribe, rate, and leave an awesome review. Show notes and social media links are available at www.excusemyadhd.com. Until next time.